AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction.
AgriTalk is brought to you by AGI SureTrack. Proper grain storage management leads to increased profit. With in-bin monitoring, you can hold grain, improve quality, reduce storage costs, and more. Bin Manager delivers all of that with automated bin monitoring from AGI SureTrack.
Private crop estimates are starting to make their way into the markets. Davis will have some of the details on that in a moment. And farmer sentiment about the ag economy is back to levels seen during the very mundane period of 2017 to 19. And what's on the minds of livestock producers? We'll find out in the Farmer Forum.
Live from Hump Morning via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with Jim Mintert of Purdue with the Ag Economic Barometer. Then it's on to our Farmer Forum with panelists Chad Lehman and Scott McGregor. Right after the news, Margie Eckelkamp from The Scoop. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
Now, if you're going to say McGregor like that, don't you think you should put a little Nordic emphasis on the Michelson somehow, some way?
Davis Michelson there. Yeah, for sure.
Welcome to AgriTalk. I'm Chip. That's Davis. We are glad that you are with us here this morning.
We are glad.
Yeah.
Yes. Why?
And it's our regular update on the Ag Economy Barometer with Jim Mintert. And there's like I said, the numbers, the overall index has kind of slipped back now into that level that we saw consistently from 2017 to 19. Now, it's a whole different pricing situation than what we had from 17 to 19. So I want Jim to kind of compare and contrast why the readings that we're getting right now on the sentiment index might not suggest as much negativism about the ag economy as what they did back in 17 through 19. So it'll be an interesting conversation.
I'm mildly obsessed with the Ag Economy Barometer.
I know.
It's just absolutely fascinating, the stuff that that comes out, the questions that they ask, and obviously, you know, the responses that they get. It's
right.
Maybe it's just I'm such a visual guy. You know, they have the nice graphs and stuff in the report, so you can just see exactly. You know?
See, now, last month, they started asking questions about are you leasing or considering leasing ground for solar energy collection. That I found interesting, and I just listened to Jim's report on it last month. But as soon as we were done with the conversation with Jim last month, I thought to myself, why in the world did they start asking that question? So when we get to that section with Jim this morning, that's where I'm going to start. Why did you even think to start asking that question? So
you took the words right out of my brain, brother.
Well, you know, I was using it.
Our brain, shall I say?
I was using it there for a second. Get to it. What you got in the news?
Chip, the commodity brokerage firm StoneX estimates the U.S. corn crop will yield an average of 176.9 bushels per acre. That makes a 14.945 billion bushel crop. This based on customer surveys and the firm's analysis. StoneX expects the U.S. soybean crop to total 4.332 billion bushels. Yeah. That's on an average yield of 50 bushels per acre. USDA's first survey-based crop estimates will come up August 12, right around the corner.
179.5 is the trend line. 50.8 is the trend line on soybeans. So both of them are below trend line. I don't think that surprised anybody in the market. We'll see. We'll see going forward what the NAS survey tells us on August 12.
The Biden administration on Tuesday announced a new two-month federal moratorium on evictions to replace the broader one that expired over the weekend. The new moratorium would take effect in areas where COVID-19 has been on the rise and last through October 3, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention said. The moratorium applies to counties facing high or substantial levels of coronavirus cases and is estimated, Chip, to cover about 90% of the U.S. population. Dairy producers are still awaiting initial details from USDA on its plans for direct COVID-19 relief payments to producers. The department aims to reimburse producers for uncompensated losses related to market impacts from the pandemic and deliver a supplemental dairy margin coverage program payment. That DMC effort would allow smaller producers who had annual production of less than 5 million pounds of milk in 2014, but which subsequently grew, to receive payments. And Republicans on the House Ways and Means Committee are calling on President Joe Biden to work with Congress to renew trade promotion authority, which expired July 1. In a letter to Biden, lawmakers said TPA is needed so, quote, America can once again lead the world by negotiating strong trade agreements. Chip.
Exactly. The TPA is the thing that it doesn't really kick open a door to trade negotiations, but it keeps the door open. Okay. So without that TPA, trade talks and communications are going to get stalled out. So TPA is very important.
While attempting to deal with intensifying drought, California state water regulators voted Tuesday to enact a drastic emergency order that will bar thousands of Californians, primarily farmers, from using stream and river water. The scope of Tuesday's order, which will apply to thousands of senior water rights across a wide swath of the state, is unprecedented, officials said. And Colorado is looking at taking some drastic steps, too. And finally, Tyson Foods announced Tuesday it will require its workforce to be vaccinated for COVID, but is getting pushback from the United Food and Commercial Workers International Union. Quote, we did not take this decision lightly, Tyson Chief Executive Donnie King said, noting less than half of the company's workers have received the vaccine. Tyson said it was negotiating with unions. The union president, Mark Perrone, said the union has encouraged members to get vaccinated, but they're concerned Tyson is implementing the mandate, quote, before the FDA has fully approved the vaccine.
Chip. Okay. Yeah, that is a development that obviously we have to watch very closely. Thank you, Davis. Let's bring in Margie Eckelkamp, editor of The Scoop. How are you, Margie?
Chip, good morning. Calling in from InfoAg in St. Louis.
What are you learning?
Yeah, so InfoAg, this is an event that is put on by the Fertilizer Institute with three core focuses, and that would be precision ag, environmental stewardship, and product innovation. And InfoAg has a 20-plus year history of really being a gathering place for folks who practice agronomy out in the field, mainly ag retail, but others as well. And it's really interesting. A lot of the questions that I have for folks are centering around return on investment, which I know is a hot topic for farmers as they're looking to invest in technology, as well as how are ag retailers and those trusted advisors helping farmers perhaps push out of their comfort zone with technology adoption, and what are some of those benefits seen? And then another great peek into the future that InfoAg always gives, because you've got a lot of more emerging and earlier technologies. And Chip, I'll share two perhaps big themes coming out of a lot of those conversations. And one would be data. And it is so paramount to make data collection and data sharing easy to really fully unlock its potential. I've heard a number of folks tell me they don't need one more new software. They need software that connects all the missing pieces for them. Yeah. And then another big topic, I know we talk a lot about it across Farm Journal, would be carbon. And what is the emerging potential for carbon for farmers and for the industry?
Right, right. You know, at some point, Margie, we're going to find that key that unlocks all the good that is going to come from all the data that has been collected. And that is going to be a monumental day for agriculture, something for everybody to look forward to. Thank you, Margie. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, Chip.
Jim Minter from Purdue University up next on AgriTalk.
AGI SureTrack's bin manager is the industry's leading grain bin management solution, supported by the only platform on the market to connect data points from the entire operation, soil, weather, machine, agronomic equipment, and grain characteristic data combined to deliver a digital picture that drives profit and production. Stay informed, stay safe, and stay connected with AGI SureTrack. For more information, visit AGISureTrack.com.
Farm Journal and the National FFA Foundation present the second annual Farm On Benefit Concert featuring country music star Easton Corbin on September 20th at 7 Central on RFD-TV.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me. It is
Chip.
Wednesday.
It, one
yes,
story.
Davis. There,
one story that we didn't get to. There just wasn't time. So much going on. Yeah. We talked with Farm Journal's milk. Boy, that was a lot to say. Karen Bonard, the other day. She mentioned a dairy farmer that's competing in the Olympics.
Yes.
I've got something. I've got some great news. Okay. I'm just going to read this down. Vermont dairy farmer turned world-renowned track star Ellie Perrier St. Pierre punched her ticket for the Olympic final in her event early Wednesday morning. She finished sixth in her heat of the women's 1,500-meter race. The first five finishers in each heat automatically get through, but the next two fastest runners from either also hop in there. So very proud.
Does it have her time? How close was she to 4 minutes?
4 minutes and 1 second. 4 minutes and 1 second.
The old 1,400
meters. I don't even know how far that is. I don't know if I've run 1,500 meters like over the last 2 years collectively. You know what I'm saying?
Love it. You know,
congratulations,
I go deer
Ellie.
Like in December, and I usually get a little bit of jogging in at that time, but that's about it.
Jog it out a little bit, do you?
Jog it out, yeah. Yeah. All right. Good stuff, Davis. Thank you.
Yeah,
thank
proud you. Of her. You bet.
Yeah, absolutely. Go, Ellie, go. Dr. Jim Mintert, Purdue University ag economist. He is the author of the Ag Economy Barometer. Works with the CME Group to get that done. Jim, it's good to talk with you again. How are you?
Great. Good to be on the air again with you, Chip.
Absolutely. Love it that you're here. Okay, 134 in July, down 3 points from a month earlier. A little softening in the index of current conditioning, a little softening in the index of future expectations, right?
Yeah, and the driver behind the decline in the barometer was really probably the index of current conditions, because it declined, I think, 6 points, and future expectations was only down a couple of points. Mm-hmm. And maybe more importantly, I think if you look at the chart and in the report, is the fact mm-hmm. that index of future expectations now for an extended period of time has been below the index of current conditions. And I think that's kind of interesting with respect to people aren't really thinking things are going to stay great for a long period of time. They think it's maybe going to be a little bit more of a return to normal, perhaps.
Yeah. Yeah. And that return to normal has kind of pulled the overall index back into that range, as you mentioned in your report, back into that range that we saw from 17 to 19. And when I think of that period in ag history, Jim, it's just kind of a blah. Nobody was really too fired up about anything 17 to 19. We were all dealing with trade wars and with China and everything. But here we are again. But the pricing structure is so different, Jim. Compare and contrast where we're at with the index now to where we were then.
Oh, that's a good point. It's more profitable now. But I think if you look at it underneath a little bit, people are concerned about what's happening on the cost structure. So, yes. You know, if you look at the comments people are making about what's going to happen to or what they think is going to happen to cash rental values, a substantial portion of people, roughly 50%, I think it was 47% of this last survey, said they think cash rent's going up in 2022. A chunk of those folks think it could go up a lot, more than 10%. So they're concerned about that. They're concerned about the price of farm inputs. I think on this survey, 30% of the people in the survey said they think farm inputs, which would include everything, right, seed, fertilizer, et cetera, could exceed 8%. That was about four times the rate that those input prices have gone up over the last decade. So I think they're worried about the squeeze in margins, right? They're looking at prices that have been great so far here in 2021, but down the road are eroding, right? If we see normal crop production, and then you look at rising input cost, and they're saying, you know, we're worried about our margins being squeezed. I think that's a little bit of what we're picking up here.
Yeah, interesting. Has that had much impact on the Farm Financial Performance Index there, the how the farm's financial performance is expected to be compared to a year ago?
Well, it dropped hard a couple of back in June, right? And then this month was actually up 3 points. So you could call that up to maybe steady. In both cases, those numbers are significantly below where we were on that Farm Financial Performance Index back in the spring and over the course of the winter.
Right.
And I think, again, people are thinking, okay, this isn't terrible, right? And I think it's important to remember this is a sentiment index, right? So it's about how people feel about what's taking place. And I think one of the things that's happened here is, although prices, you know, if you're selling corn or soybeans at even at today's prices, they're still very profitable, but not as profitable as it was earlier in the year. And I think, you know, if you look back to that time frame in early May when those prices were peaking, that really gave us a lot of optimism. But then we've kind of, you know, every day we're probably comparing back to that peak as opposed to a long-term average. And I think we're picking up some of that with respect to sentiment. That's one of the reasons we're seeing the erosion. Not that we've lost profitability, but we just don't feel as positive about it as we did when things were rallying so sharply last fall and over the course of the winter.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Mintert, Davis Michelson here. Sentiment, you mentioned that just a couple of times in that last little piece. Interesting thought here. Okay, we had the Indiana farmland values survey come out, scored a record high for summertime prices, and yet, over the last couple of reports here, we've seen the short-term farmland value expectations index on the decline. Can you help me get my head around that?
Well, two things to remember. First of all, it is a little lower, both the short-term and the long-term. This month went down a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But remember, if you look at the chart, that those numbers are still pretty close to historic highs, right? At least over the time frame that we've been collecting data, which goes back to the fall of 2015. So, you know, it's down compared to the prior couple of months ago, but higher than almost any other observation other than a couple of months ago. So I think that's one thing to remember. The other thing to remember, though, I think, is if you're a producer filling out this survey or completing the survey, you're already aware that prices in your local community have gone up substantially for farmland, right? So the folks that they're filling out the survey here in July, they hadn't seen the report for Indiana, but they've seen local auction results, and they know that prices have already gone up. So the question is, okay, we've already seen an increase in prices. How bullish are you about farmland values relative to today's values?
Gotcha.
And I think we're picking some of that up. People are saying, okay, we've already seen a big rally. Can it continue? Well, maybe, but I'm not quite as optimistic about the rally continuing as I was a few months ago before I saw these higher prices showing up at the auctions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Jim, for the second month in a row, you asked questions about leasing ground for solar energy collection. We can get to some of the details, but after we talked about it last month, my thought process was, what? Why in the world inspired you to ask that question in the first place?
Well, partly because Eastern Corn Belt, especially Indiana, it appears to be a hotbed for solar leasing and to some extent wind energy as well. Indiana is kind of on the border between the eastern matrix and the western matrix for the power grid. And so it's turned in as a little bit of a hotbed. There's a lot of activity, a lot of talk, and actually some contracts being signed for solar leases here in Indiana. So that's what kind of inspired us to do it. We were getting questions. We were hearing a lot about it, and that's what kind of caused us to do it. Other parts of the country, I realize, not so much. But here in the Eastern Corn Belt, there's quite a bit of activity, especially in Indiana.
Interesting. Okay. I know when you finish this up and you write the summary of this every month, Jim, there's got to be something that makes you sit back in your chair and kind of tap your head or scratch your head and say, geez, I wonder where that's taking us next. What was that this month?
Well, I think what you were talking about earlier with respect to where's profitability going and what kind of decisions are you going to make going forward? People are worried about the cost of production going up. They're worried about what their margins are going to be. They're worried about cash rental rates going up. It's an environment of uncertainty. And I think the one thing that maybe we haven't talked about much lately is people are less confident going forward that we're going to see growth in international trade. And if you look at the rally that we've seen here, an awful lot of it is attributable to strength in exports, especially to China. And if you look at our survey, you know, one of the questions we ask pretty routinely is, what do you think is going to happen to ag exports over the next 5 years? And if you go back to when the phase one agreement was signed, we had a very high percentage of people saying they thought exports were going to grow over the next 5 years. I think it was up over 70% back then. If you look at the most recent survey, that's down to about just a little over 40%. So okay, people are less confident that we're going to see growth in exports, and maybe that makes them a little bit concerned about where we're headed in the future.
A little cautious about the future. Great perspective, Jim. Man, thank you so much.
Thanks for the opportunity, Chip. Look forward to
you next month. You bet. We'll talk to you next month. That is Dr. Jim Minter, Purdue University Ag Economist, with the details on the Ag Economy Barometer. We've got the Farmer Forum up next. Farm Journal and the National FFA Foundation present the second annual Farm on Benefit Concert, featuring country music star Easton Corbin. The concert will air on Monday, September 20 at 7 Central on RFD TV. And your FFAer can be part of it. Just text a picture of them in their blue jacket with the words Farm On to 31313 or use the Farm On hashtag on social media. Join us for the hashtag Farm On Benefit Concert, September 20 at 7 p.m. on RFD TV.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Beej, you know, we take a look at how the markets have performed so far this week. That big down day yesterday in the soy complex, a little bit of a recovery today.
Yeah, we're trying, Chip, pushing to the upside just a little bit, about 3, 4, or 5 cents or so in most of those contracts. And you hit the nail on the head right there it's just corrective trade. And same thing's happening in the meal market. We've got soy oil, though, pulling to the downside, so we got quite a bit of spreading action going on in the product markets between oil and meal so far this morning.
Yeah, very good. That pressure on the soybean oil trade has become fairly persistent in here, Brian. That's got to be hard for the bean market to deal with.
Yeah, and you know that had been a source of support. The soy oil has been supporting soybeans, and now we've pulled back. The recent story that some of the food makers are going to EPA and asking for biodiesel mandates to be reduced, and I don't know if anything will come of that or not. But yesterday that hit the market, followed through today, so definitely is on traders' minds.
Very good, very good. Take us over to livestock trade. Some strength in live cattle.
Yeah, a little bit firmer trade there. Cash trade so far this week, it hasn't been well established, but what has been traded, it has been steady to a little bit firmer. So that's given us some price support in the futures this morning. The weakness in corn, although mild, is giving us a little bit of support in feeder cattle along with the strength in live cattle. And then pretty quiet, actually, in the hog market with a narrowly mixed tone so far.
Yeah, very narrowly mixed. Thank you, Brian. That is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone.
Hey, the Farmer Forum here on AgriTalk is sponsored by ACAM. Building trust in food begins with empowering farmers through one of the largest and most diverse conservation and sustainability-focused public-private partnerships in our nation's history, and that is America's Conservation Ag Movement. Partners in the program include Farm Journal Foundation, Trust in Food, Farm Journal Initiative, and it is done with the financial and technical support of USDA's Natural Resource Conservation Service. Learn more about ACAM at agweb.com/ACAM. Let's get this thing going. We got Scott McGregor from Iowa. Scott, welcome back. How are you, buddy?
Real good, Chip. Thanks for giving me a holler to be on this morning.
You bet. I want to start with let's bring in Chad, too. Chad Lehman over in Illinois. How are you, Chad?
Hey, good morning, Chip. Thanks for having me on. I'm doing well.
You bet. You bet. Scott, I want to start with you. You're just up the road from me here. And, man, we have been missing rain after rain after rain here south of you. Have you been missing them too?
Yeah, I think you get east of Highway 63, and it's been few and far between. I think New Hampton's caught a few rains, but, man, western Chickasaw County, Floyd, into north central Iowa, all the way to Sioux Falls is really dry.
Yeah. How is the corn handling it right now, Scott?
It's on life support this week, I would say. You know, it is really amazing how good it looks from the road. And I don't know. I mean, I was told last night that we're 5 inches behind rainfall on compared to 2012. So that's a pretty telling number right there. And very, you know, we're just living on a half inch here and a half inch there. We had a wet 10th last week. Yeah.
What? Wet tent.
It's nuts.
Man, I was gone last week, but things sure didn't change much around my place from when I was gone, that's for sure. And yeah, like you said, you can see the stress, and when you make a drive through northeast Iowa and even east of Waterloo, northeast of Waterloo, when you get into the hills, around, you know, up around DeCord and everything, you can see the stress out there, Scott. It's not as pretty as people like to say it is, I think.
No, and the combines will tell the tale 2 months from now, but if we don't get any rain in the next 2 weeks, Labor Day is going to be harvest. So
that's right. So, that's exactly right. I've been going up and down 380 here this week. And watching the soybean crop even start to show stress south of 20, and on some of the lighter soils, it's really starting to, the stress is starting to show up. So I don't know. Well, it's not like what Chad's dealing with over in Illinois, is it, buddy? You've got some pretty good conditions, don't you?
Well, I feel bad even commenting after listening to that, Chip, and I'm still sitting here scratching my head trying to figure out like what a wet tent is and how it compares to a dry tent. But I that one's beyond me. But we're in really good shape here. We went through pollination with cool temps and plenty of moisture. Right now, the potential in central Illinois is very good, and we're grateful for it. I would say if you're going to poke at anything, it's just the hazy days that we've had, and you guys probably have had too, that you're just kind of preventing some sunlight from getting down, but that's getting kind of nitpicky.
You had some of those really wet conditions a month ago, maybe 6 weeks ago, Chad. I mean, there was some ponding and some drown out areas, right?
Yep. Localized, we had some of that. I would say the first half of June was pretty dry here, and then the latter half of June was really wet. And then it's just been nice and steady rain since. And so, like I say, I feel bad even saying it, knowing how dry you guys are, but we're, I guess, kind of in a garden spot, I feel like, here in the Midwest, right here in central Illinois.
Hey, man, don't feel bad about it. Take it when you get it.
No problem.
Yeah, that's exactly
right.
Well,
we'll do our part to try to keep feed prices down, Scott, for hog and cattle guys.
There you go. That's the least of our problems right now. We got to get the crop first.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. You know, that brings me to something that we were talking about with Jim Mintert, and as he was talking about the cost of production, I know that he was thinking about row crop production, corn and soybean production in the Midwest. But in the back of my mind, I'm thinking I've got Scott and Chad on, and we're going to be talking about input costs too. That's been something that you guys have had to manage for months now, right, Scott?
Right. And, you know, feed prices have been high. Distillers' prices have been really high. and that's just one of the inputs you got to have. The bottom line is the cost of the feeder cattle has been high, and it's going to get really high the way it looks. I mean, there were some opportunities the first of the year, some cattle were laid in, but, you know, there isn't a lot of blue sky in the margins on the fed cattle market right now.
Right. Chad, on
The only plus side. Sorry, Chip. I was just going to say that the one plus side from the hog side of things, even though we are dealing with higher feed costs and so forth, is certainly the inflation in construction costs have really minimized how much expansion we've seen in the hog industry this last, you know, 6 or 8 months.
Yeah, that's a great point, Chad. And as we were talking even earlier this year about some of the expansion plans, that the cost of construction was coming into play. But on the feed side of things, Chad, the soybean meal market has responded. It's traded to the upside, but it didn't get crazy on us. Am I right there?
Oh, you're exactly right. I feel a whole lot better about what we're buying soybean meal for than, you know, if you look at corn and some of the amino acids and what the prices have done there. So soybean meal has been, yeah, I don't know. Processors are making the money on the oil side, I guess. But meal has been very, very fairly priced, and we just kind of keep hedging it as we get opportunities in those mid 300 levels.
Yeah, yeah. Chad, I want to stay with you on this one here for a second, because Jim also mentioned that farmers in general less confident of growth in international trade, demand for product overseas. After the buying binge that China went on for U.S. pork in the last year, we've got to pull back our expectations some, don't we?
Well, I agree. The odds of it getting of more trade sure seem less than the odds of it going, you know, retracting. I just don't see that we're going to continue to export these kind of numbers. But I cannot complain. The business the buying that's taken place in this hog market's been unreal, and we've had great opportunities to have good margins for a while now.
Yeah, yeah. And on the side of beef here, Scott, it's just the persistence of demand around the globe for beef that is helping out some. It's at least helping out the boxed beef market.
Right, and we've seen a spike in that in the last couple of days. Yeah. You know, it had worked its way down to the mid 200. Now we're back up. We're going to be knocking on 300 again's door here if things keep progressing as they do. And it's like Chad said, our exports have been really, really good in beef. Year-over-year records, you can't complain. I mean, it's going good. And, you know, Japan's not opened up yet. That's a huge market. But but our exports are well above year-to-year numbers on beef.
Right. You know, the export demand is so important to us, but domestic demand, we got to take care of that as well. And Chad, I mean, I cannot believe it, but I think Prop 12 is going to take effect on January 1. And those California consumers have no idea what's coming their way, and they voted for it.
Just makes me sick. I mean, you see the headlines earlier this week or late last or whatever, ABC News and Yahoo, about bacon shortages coming to California. And, you know, the restaurant associations out there are wondering what in the world they're going to do to try to get bacon. And right now, less than 5% of the hog farms in this country can be Prop 12 compliant by January 1. And frankly, we don't even know exactly what the rules are, because California still hasn't developed those yet. And, you know, we're what, 4 months away, 5 months away from this taking effect and California consuming 15% of our domestic pork. So pretty scary to think about, isn't it?
Yeah, it is very scary to think about it. And I was in Northern California last week. You guys probably heard me talking about it earlier this week. But, of course, I went through the Safeway and took a look at what's going on in the meat case. And bacon prices are already expensive, okay? I mean, I spent $11 on a package of bacon to take to a little cabin. $11.
Wow.
That is going to be an $18 to $20 product in 2022 if this Prop 12 goes through, according to the work by the Hammam. I shouldn't have even started. According to some of the economic analysis that has been done on this, it's absolutely crazy. Okay, when we come back, we got to talk about some animal disease issues, and there's a beef meeting coming up. We'll get some details on that.
I'm Andrew McRae, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, a farmer-focused podcast important to agriculture. It's brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Visit pivotbio.com to find a representative near you.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Florey, the Farmer Forum, sponsored by ACAM. That is America's Conservation Ag Movement. To learn more about the movement and ACAM's partners, visit www.agweb.com/ACAM. Chad Lehman from Illinois, Scott McGregor from Iowa, and Chad, the comment that you made about the hazy days that we've been dealing with got at Corn Firmer to respond. All of these hazy days may be helping crops in drought-stricken areas, but what is it doing to the rest of the crops? That's an excellent question, and you brought it up earlier, Chad. There's no way of knowing it, but when there's less energy in the to collect, there's less energy being collected. That's kind of the bottom line, isn't it?
It kind of reminds me of, I think it was 2009, where we just had so many cloudy days and we just didn't get the growing degree units. And remember, we were all harvesting corn till Christmas that year. Wasn't that 09?
Yep. Yep. That was up in our part of the world, Scott, that was a year that we had a lot of 45, 45, 45 corn.
I hear you. Hey, just a real quick shout out to FSA for releasing the CRP for emergency haying and grazing. That's just a huge benefit because we're only at 35 to 40% normal on our hay crop here this year. So, you know, whatever we can get to supplement, it's going to be a huge asset.
Absolutely.
Guys have got enough work.
And Scott, I don't know if you heard my comments from earlier this week about what I saw on the rangeland out in Northern California. And we drove by literally millions of acres of it. And I maybe saw 200 cows.
the liquidation is going to be a huge problem here. North Dakota's, I mean, they've been selling cows since the end of spring.
Yeah.
You know, and it hasn't gotten any better.
Yeah.
So
it's
going to be tough.
Yeah. Let's stay on cattle issues here for just a minute. Are you satisfied, Scott, with the cattle market hearing and Stabenow's conclusion that the market just needs more time to work it out?
Yeah, I mean, that's her opinion. We need more time. We've had a lot of time to get this thing worked out. It's been frustrating at best to move fat cattle and whatnot, and it's just the whole leverage situation and the transparency is very difficult. And John Chabon, a great friend of mine, did a wonderful job testifying last week in front of the Judiciary Committee. And, you know, he was pretty straightforward, which he is, on what needs to happen and what the sentiment is in the countryside.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be a big topic of discussion for you guys next week, isn't it?
I think so. On the policy side, it's going to be front and center, I'm sure. And I hope, you know, there's been a lot of people, different organizations coming together with this whole problem, trying to find a common ground. So let's hope that conversation can continue and get some quick results, because we can't wait for legislation to be passed. We just need things to happen quicker.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Chad, when we were talking about pork exports and everything, I was running through my mind, we need to maintain the ability to export pork too, and that means keeping ASF out of this country, and it's not far from us right now, is it?
No, you're exactly right. If we get ASF here, all exports are shut down, and with the announcement late last week that they had found it in the Dominican Republic, was pretty alarming because it's the first time in over 40 years it's been in the Western Hemisphere. Yep. And, you know, the Dominican is only 100 miles from Puerto Rico. And, you know, those Caribbean nations really don't have the resources to test for it. Those positive tests were completed at Plum Island as part of a cooperative surveillance program with USDA. And so this is really concerning. Just thinking about how many tourists from the U.S. and Canada go to the Dominican and you know, Haiti's right there. The chances of them bringing, you know, people just bring food home. They bring home, you know, vegetation or plants at times. It's really concerning what could happen here.
Yeah. Yes, it certainly is. Certainly is. Hey, have you noticed any impact from the slowdown in the processing speeds, Chad?
Yeah, the line speed went into effect at the end of June, and it impacts about six swine slaughtering yep. plants in the country, and Beardstown, Illinois is one of them, a JBS plant where we send quite a few pigs. And so you notice it right away as all of a sudden, instead of, you know, 20,000 pigs a day that they're getting in, they're getting 18,000. And so all of a sudden you start experiencing backlog, and it really defeats the purpose, because now they have to ask employees to start working mandatory overtime. And so there goes the worker safety purpose for which it was put into, you know, effect 20 years ago.
Yep.
It makes no sense. And we're really hoping that we can still get a change in this ruling, but it's a 2.5% loss in pork packing plant capacity nationwide, but it's certainly felt more regionalized because of, you know, it's six plants, but it just depends where they are.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely it is. We've only got about 40 seconds left, but I'm going to ask you, Scott, any last comments? What are you really thinking about?
Oh, just the weather and getting into fall and trying to get enough feed around to get everything through the next year.
Very good. Very good. Thank you, Scott. Appreciate your time today, buddy. Hopefully we'll catch rain. Chad, what about you? Any last thoughts?
Yeah.
Yeah, same thing. Just thinking about how much corn we need to have around to get us till, you know, middle of September when hopefully harvest starts. And then we'll see what happens after that. But really appreciate talking with you today, Chip. Enjoy the show as usual.
Excellent. Good stuff, you guys. Fantastic job. Thank you, Chad. That is Scott McGregor from Iowa, Chad Lehman from Illinois. Thank you so much for joining us on the Farmer Forum today. Come back this afternoon. We're going to have a conversation with Scott Davis from Bullpen Trading. Tomorrow morning, Kirk Covington right here on AgriTalk.